War is costly, and Skip Heitzig shares just how much war has cost us both financially and in human lives.
Nobody likes war. Well, there are a few people, I imagine, that grin at the thought of going to battle, but most people hate the idea of warfare. And as much as we hate the idea, only 8% of world history has been a time of peace. The rest has seen war in various parts of the earth. In fact, it's estimated that from 3600 BC, there have been killed in war 3,640,000,000 people. And that the value of destruction from all of the cumulative battles that have gone on would pay for a golden belt to encircle the entire earth. It would be 100 miles wide and 33 feet thick. Pure gold.
Make the connection.
For whatever reason, people are fascinated with the end of the world. Just look at how many Hollywood blockbusters have focused on this topic. There's even one releasing later this fall called 2012, where scientists and the military race to avert a world-ending disaster predicted by the Mayan calendars. Now, of course, in the movies, human ingenuity and the human spirit helps us survive and often avoid the end of the world. But as we'll learn today in The Connection with Skip Heitzig, that won't happen when the world really ends. And we'll begin today's study here in just a moment. But first, one of the best ways you can help people prepare for the end of the world is by sharing Christ with them. And you can do that as a member of the Global Connectors. Let's find out more.
Uganda is one of the poorest nations in the world due to destructive economic policies and persistent instability. Although improvements have recently been made in these areas, the road to recovery is still a long one. Even more crucial than the nation's economic revival is its need for spiritual revival. And as a member of the Global Connectors, you can help bring new life and a fresh move of the gospel to the churches of Uganda. For just $25 a month, you'll help support a global team that's working to transform countries throughout the African continent with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Sign up today when you call 1-800-922-1888. And when you do, you'll also have access to a new resource each month to download. This month, you'll hear a message from John Bosco Tulett of Calvary Chapel in Jinja, Uganda.
I always repeat that the book of James is not written to the non-believers. The book of James is written to the believers, those who have given their life to Jesus Christ. And he wants them to get rooted on doing exactly what God has acquired them that they must do.
Help the Christians of Uganda experience spiritual revival and a new beginning in their relationship with Christ. It's just $25 to be a part of the Global Connectors, but that monthly donation can help change the course of nations. Find out more and how to get that free download from John Bosco Tulett on James 5 by just calling 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectionradio.org.
Well, we certainly have our sights set on spreading the gospel to the ends of the world, and you can help us as a Global Connector by calling 1-800-922-1888 or by logging on to connectionradio.org. You know, the end of the world may make for thrilling movies, but when the world really ends, it would be far more terrifying than thrilling. And we'll get a glimpse of that in today's study, right here on The Connection.
And make the connection.
Open your Bibles to Revelation chapter 16, and Skip Heitzig will begin today's study with an explanation of why even miracles aren't always enough to convince people to believe in God.
It's said that there was a famous explorer who was captured by some savages in South America, and they were all around him and about ready to pounce on him, and he came up with an idea. He thought he'd pull a cigarette lighter out of his pocket and show them his magic. So he pulls the lighter out, and he says, "I'm a fire maker." And they're all looking at him with their eyes beady but ready to pounce at any moment. And he flicks the thumb and outbursts the flame. And they all fall back in astonishment. And he says, "See, magic." Thinking, "Oh, I've got this one sealed up." He was confident. "It's magic," he said. And the chief, looking at him, replied, "You're right, it is magic. This is the first time we've ever seen a cigarette lighter work the first try." Then he knew he was in for it. I think a lot of times we figure that if the world could just see enough dazzling miracles, signs, and wonders, that they would all be converted, they would turn to God. That's simply not true. The tribulation period will see more miraculous activity, both divine and demonic, but they will follow the demonic and they will shun God during this time. We are in the last of the last judgments of God as far as reading about it in the book of Revelation. It's the worst period on earth. It's called the Great Tribulation Period, also called the Day of the Lord. It has many titles. Jesus simply said it was the worst. And now we come to the end. We've had seven seals. We've had seven trumpet judgments. And we're in the middle of the seven last bowl judgments of this period. It's at the very end of the seven-year period. The last 3.5 years and the very few moments of time in that period before Jesus comes again. We see here that there's a war that is coming, as well as a renovation of the face of the earth, all the end of the world. William Shakespeare wrote of the horrors of war when he said, "O war, thou son of hell." Nobody likes war. Well, there are a few people, I imagine, that grin at the thought of going to battle, but most people hate the idea of warfare. And as much as we hate the idea, only 8% of world history has been a time of peace. The rest has seen war in various parts of the earth. In fact, it's estimated that from 3600 BC, there have been killed in war 3,640,000,000 people. And that the value of destruction from all of the cumulative battles that have gone on would pay for a golden belt to encircle the entire earth. It would be 100 miles wide and 33 feet thick. Pure gold. That's the value of destruction. Every single day there's a war taking place somewhere. Right now there's a war taking place somewhere on the earth. And the warfare seems to increase over time. That is, there's more people killed today. There's more wars today than there were 10 years ago. What about the future? What wars will take place in the future? Well, Jesus said there would be wars and there would be rumors of wars. Those would be signals of the end. We have seen already a lot of warfare in the book of Revelation predicted. But then also he predicted that final phase of history that he said would be the worst of any other time, warfare included. In fact, Jesus in Luke 21 described the great emotion that people worldwide would feel during this time. He said, "There will be distress of nations with perplexity. Men's hearts will be failing them for fear and the expectation of those things that are coming upon the earth." That's the general emotion of people during this time of history. And the Bible predicts a final war that comes in several stages. We call it the Battle of Armageddon, and it's featured here in the sixth bowl. I remember during the Gulf War, Saddam Hussein said that it would be the mother of all battles. You remember that? He was wrong. The mother of all battles is yet to come. A war unlike the world has ever seen. Now, it's already been bad. We have seen the fourth seal. When it was opened to reveal the contents of the scroll, the fourth seal, we saw that a fourth of the population of the earth will be wiped out. And then there was the sixth trumpet that was blown, and when that trumpet was blown, a third of earth's population that was left over was killed, which makes around half of the earth already during that time wiped out. And now comes this final war. Unquestionably, it will kill millions and millions of people. As we look at these last verses, the final two bowls, I want to divide it up this way. The War of Armageddon in verses 12 through 16 is spoken about. It's even mentioned in verse 16. And then the wasting of the earth, which I guess is God's prerogative, isn't it? He made it, beginning in verse 17 through 21. And then finally, a word of assurance that's sandwiched right in the middle there in verse 15 by Jesus Christ. First of all, this War of Armageddon, we notice that in verse 12, the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. Now, this isn't the first time we've encountered the river Euphrates in the book of Revelation. We saw it in Revelation chapter 9 when 200 million are prepared for battle. Some think it's 200 million demons, others think it's 200 million soldiers. But the river Euphrates was mentioned. It was a time when the world would be prepared for a battle. The area of the river Euphrates is really where civilization all began. The Garden of Eden, most think, is at that final place where it goes into the Persian Gulf in Iraq, in that area of Kuwait, actually, was the Garden of Eden. This is where civilization began, the Fertile Crescent. This is where the first sin was committed, the first lie was told, the first murder happened, the first grave was dug. The world began here, and the world seemingly ends at this place. The river Euphrates itself, it's a long piece of water. It's 1,800 miles long. And because it's so long, it's called the Great River. It was always called that. It was the boundary line of the Roman Empire, and anything east of that was east as far as Israel was concerned. That was just the eastern part of the world, the Orient. The headwaters of the Euphrates is at Mount Ararat. Does that ring a bell for any of you? Something is resting on Mount Ararat in a glacier. It's the Ark of Noah. In fact, it's been discovered and many are still trying to get at it. And it flows from Mount Ararat and goes across the Middle East and it empties out into the Persian Gulf. Why does it need to be dried up? It says so that these people can come across, the kings from the east. In some places, the Euphrates is 3,600 feet across and 30, 40, 60 feet deep. But more than that, the reason it needs to be dried up is if we take this all in context, we have seen one of the bowl judgments was a scorching heat that comes upon planet Earth. And if it comes the way the Bible indicates it's going to come, it will be such a scorching heat. The temperature of the Earth will rise to the point that these great polar ice caps will begin to melt. And if they begin to melt, including the glacier up in Mount Ararat, you can imagine what that would do to the Earth. It could raise the river level up to 200 feet and completely wipe out great cities of the Earth. Affecting Mount Ararat, it would flood the entire Fertile Crescent. The Euphrates would be massively overflooding its boundaries. Now, if some of the scholars are correct that the Ark is up there at the 15,000-foot level. Ararat is 17,000 feet high. It's a huge glacier. If it begins to melt, what will the world say when that Ark comes floating down? Just a thought. This river is dried up so that it says the kings of the east or the kings from the east might be prepared. A survey of 100 commentaries on the book of Revelation yields 50 different interpretations of who the kings of the east are. Who are they? They are, here it is, here's the answer, the kings of the east. That's because that's what it says. Who are the kings of the east exactly? I don't know. Some rulers from the Orient, from the east, who are prepared to march across and invade Israel and meet at this Valley of Armageddon. Today, the east of the Euphrates, the great areas of India, China, Pakistan, so forth, this area of the world has most of the world's population. It has great military potential. And they will march. Literally, it's the kings of the rising sun, Anatolia in the original language. Anything east of the Euphrates River. And some people say, well, this is Red China. That's a possibility. Mao Zedong once said that in the battle for the world, China will field an army of 200 million Interesting number to pull out. That's what he said. What is interesting, and I'm pulling the 200 million because it says that over in Revelation 9 in the same context of Euphrates, there weren't 200 million people on earth when John predicted that. In fact, a lot of people scoffed at it. Now it is definitely a possibility. And so it could be China, as some say. We don't know who it is exactly. It could also be Muslim nations. They would have a reason to attack Israel. And we know that China has supplied Muslim nations with arms. So it could be people from the area of Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, India, Muslims from that area who would swarm into Israel. There is a dam controlled by the Muslims in Turkey that could virtually dry the river, though I see this really as a supernatural drying if there is that kind of inundation of floodwaters on the earth. And it would seem, at least the armies coming across would think, this is great. It dried up. It's miraculous, as if God is doing them a favor when in fact he's leading them as sheep to the slaughter. It's a trap. It's sort of like the Red Sea when it dried up and Pharaoh and all of his armies came after the children of Israel. It also was a trap. In verse 13 and 14, we have these kings being deceived by an interesting vision. I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out, rivet, of the mouth of the dragon, the mouth of the beast, and the mouth of the false prophets. These are spirits of demons performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Poor John. He had to see some of the grossest things in that vision. Yeah, I'm looking and I see these three guys and frogs come out of their mouth. Slimy frogs. It's like a bad pizza nightmare or something. And yet he sees it. Frogs were considered not only disgusting to ancient peoples, but unclean and defiled to Jews, to even Persians. Many people of that culture, of those cultures, saw frogs as unclean. So the metaphor of this slimy frog that represents an evil spirit coming out of the mouth of the dragon, which we saw as Satan in chapter 12, the beast, which is the Antichrist, chapter 13, the false prophet, which is his religious sidekick, his representative. We've already read about these characters. Indicates that the Antichrist and the false prophet, inspired by demonic activity, demons coming from Satan, will influence the world by their speech. That's the source of influence, the words of the mouth, and by miraculous signs and wonders. We already know that the beast, the second beast, the false prophet, will be able to animate an image of the Antichrist, make it come to life, fake a resurrection, so to speak. And that the world will marvel at it and will worship the Antichrist because of it. So there will be a demonic influence during this time. The spirit of the new age will come alive and influence kings and nations to come in this battle. It brings up an important point. I believe that many rulers in government today are demonically controlled. It has to be. There's no other way to explain some of the atrocities that happen still today and have happened in history. You think of Adolf Hitler. There's no other way to explain what he did and how he thought apart from demonic activity. Killing of 6 million Jews, the weird thoughts in his head, and it's common knowledge that he hired spiritists, mediums, and conferred with them over battle plans and future strategies. Which brings up a point for us. Pray for your leaders. The Bible tells us to pray for kings and all those who are in authority that we can live and lead a peaceable life. We're to pray for them. Now, why do these nations come? Remember what has come so far in these bold judgments. They come in darkness. They come with boils. They come after being scorched by heat, and still they come. Why? Perhaps it's one final attack against Jerusalem to get Israel. Put a nonsense to this crisis. But there's something deeper than that. They're actually fighting God. It's as if they have been deceived into believing that there's enough power in their favor to do God in. We're going to fight God. God thinks he's so big, wait till he sees us. Now that is deception. But Psalm 2 anticipates this. It says, the kings of the earth set themselves. The rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his Christ. And they say, let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us. Now turn over to chapter 17, or look down at it if it's on the same page, in verse 13. They are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast, that is, these nations. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. For he is the Lord of lords, the King of kings, and those who are with him are called chosen and faithful. Satan, knowing Jesus' second coming is close at hand, this is the end of the end, through deception of the Antichrist, the false prophet, brings the military might of the world together, gathered in Israel, and thinking that they're going to overcome God. But here's the rest of the story. This is God's perspective now. Listen to Zechariah predicting this. The prophet says, God says, I will gather all the nations to Jerusalem to fight against it. Then the Lord will go out against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. So it's really not the battle of Armageddon. It is a campaign. It is a military war. But it's not a struggle. It's not like God calls in extra troops to finish up the job. He just simply puts an end to it. Takes over. It is a hostile takeover, you might say. Just their toast, their history. He will fight against them. The gathering place, notice, is called Armageddon. That's the Hebrew name, and it is an actual place. 60 miles north of Jerusalem is a valley, and there's a mound. There's not a mountain, though the term Armageddon comes from two words, har, meaning mountain, Megiddo, Megiddo. It's the mountain of the plain of Megiddo. It is simply a mound. It's an archaeological dig today of 20-some cities layered upon one another. And it forms a lookout point over a valley. It's a huge valley. In fact, it's called the Valley of Armageddon. It's the meeting point of two valleys, the plain of Esdraelon and the valley of Jezreel. It's beautiful today, filled with fruits and vegetables, kibbutzim, where people live and flourish. But it is a gathering place. It is a battlefield. Throughout history, it has been a battlefield. 200 battles have been fought in that valley. From Thutmose, the pharaoh, to Lord Allenby of the British. Deborah and Barak fought there. Samson defeated the Philistines there. Napoleon, when he came to Israel looking over that valley, said it was the most natural battlefield in all of the world that he had ever seen. Titus the Roman fought a battle there. Sennacherib the Assyrian, Antiochus Epiphanes, and a whole bunch of other dudes have fought in that place. And so they will come to Megiddo, but not just to a valley. After all, this is a lot of people, representative of all the nations. In fact, it says a couple chapters back that the battlefront will encompass 200 miles, 160 furlongs, we read in chapter 14, verse 20. And that is the stretch of that whole battle. And 200 miles is roughly the measurement of the whole land of Israel from north to south, or from that valley all the way down to the Dead Sea. And so this is the campaign of Armageddon.
That's where we're going to have to pause for today. But hopefully this glimpse of the end of the world has you thinking about how you will prepare for it. No amount of ingenuity or human spirit will help you escape and survive what's coming. The only way you can prepare for it is through a relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to know more about how you can have such a relationship, don't hesitate to call us at 1-800-922-1888. You can also ask for a copy of today's teaching when you contact us. It's available for just $6 when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. Plus, if this is your first time to contact us, we can also send you a free bonus from Skip. It's a booklet he's written called When Kingdoms Collide, and we'll send that free to anyone who contacts us for the first time today. So call us at 1-800-922-1888 and pick up your free copy of Skip's booklet, or write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. We look forward to hearing from you, especially those of you who are contacting us for the first time. We also want to thank you for your support of The Connection.
And make the connection.
On our next broadcast, we'll take one last look at the final judgments God will pour out on the earth. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.